Hello, listeners, and welcome to Up Next with Alice and Dave, a podcast where we interview interesting people who live everyday lives. My name is David, and as always, I am joined by my co-host, Alice.
So today we are joined by Keegan Peace. Keegan is a phenomenal young man, a full-time primary school teacher. He is an author of a children's book, which tells the story of a polka dot prince finding his identity, and he is a very active member of his community. Keegan's story is both inspiring and honest. Here's Keegan. Keegan, welcome to Up Next. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for having me.
Oh, we're very excited. Dave and I have been talking about this for a while.
Yeah, absolutely. Afternoon, Keegan.
Good afternoon, David.
So before we begin, we'd like you to paint a picture of yourself. So tell us what your childhood was like, what it was like growing up, your family, education, just a bit of an all-rounder.
All good. Easy question. Well, it all started once upon a time in Inala. My mother and father both hail from that area. They grew up there. They went to school there. And they both spent a lot of their youth struggling, as a lot of people did in their sort of area and at their time, because they had some very big families on both ends and very overworked mothers. So both of my grandmothers were very strong women, but one had a lot of sons on my dad's side and one had a lot of daughters and one son on my mother's side. Mum and Dad eventually decided to have me. They got the stork to deliver me on 1997. And when I was a toddler, we moved to the nearby suburb of Forest Lake, where we stayed for the first sort of 10 years of my life. Mum and Dad were very keen on giving me the best childhood they could, and eventually my brother as well. I spent a lot of my younger years bouncing between my very large extended family, particularly my auntie Shelley, who lives with Down syndrome and is taken care of by my nan, who's my grandmother on my mother's side. And a babysitter in Inala named Thelma Black, who was sort of running one of the very few affordable childcare situations in the area for my mum.
What's the age gap between you and your brother, Keegan?
It's a four-year age gap, so not too bad, but it was certainly a shock to four-year-old me. Turned a corner.
You're not the centre of attention anymore.
Yeah, haven't been for a long time. but yeah, I bounced back and forward between them. I was fortunate enough in 2003, when I was six, to become part of a newly built Peter 12 school. And I stayed there from grade one until grade 12. So it was a very unique sort of schooling situation. I went to a kindergarten in Forest Lake, but the newly emerging school was one that Mum was pretty keen on getting me into. And then a lot of my extended family went in there as well. All my cousins went there.
Yeah, trendsetter.
Got some cousins still in there. Yeah, I was a trendsetter.
And what school was that?
I was St. Augustine's College down at Augustine Heights, formerly called St. Augustine's College Springfield, but it's been named after the suburb that was built around it, which we moved to in 2007. So when I was there, I spent the next 12 years of my life learning all you do in the system. I was very keen on drama in high school, and I spent a lot of energy trying to entertain on the stage and at the lunch table with a mixed response. When push came to shove, though, in the later years of school, I had to make a decision as to what I wanted to pursue. And I decided that those big influences on my life, educators like Thelma Black, who was a babysitter and very much an educator to me, Marlene Blundell, who was a librarian at St. Augustine's College and a foundation member, she was very, very influential to me. Rachel Mullaney, who was my first teacher, Libby Lee and Leon Capra, who were those foundation staff that founded the school, they're all very influential and really fostered a sense of education in me that followed throughout my life. They gave me a spark and a motivation I wanted to pass on to others. And I also figured that teaching is the longest and most secure acting gig you could ever get in your life. You have to pretend a lot every day.
I just find that so amazing. You can remember your teachers' names. Like I had to do, so I've just applied to do my Master of Learning and Teaching, and we had to go back and write down teachers as part of our non-academic entry requirement that meant certain things to you. And I couldn't remember half my teachers' names. So I had to label one of them maths because I couldn't remember.
At least you had a teacher in maths that was an influence to you, Alice. So.
Yeah.
So, you know, you attended St. Augustine School from, was that Peter?
Yeah.
Grade 12?
Yes, yeah, so prep wasn't a thing back then. So it was preschool to 12, but I joined in grade 1. When the school started, went to preschool at Forest Lake, but yeah.
Ah, that's right.
Yeah. 12. Yeah.
So after graduating from St. Augustine's, you decided to go on to university and pursue a career as a teacher.
Yes. Yeah.
So as a young male teacher, how do you think we can encourage more male teachers into the profession.
Yeah, I usually think being a male and having that mean you're in the minority in a workplace isn't a bad thing. And we need more equity and more opportunities for women in roles across the board. But with that said, the teaching profession, as you said, particularly in primary where I am, is the exception when it comes to male staff, because they're very hard to come by in schools unless it's a sports teacher. For example, I'm the only male from P-6. Wow. Peter 5, except for the sports teacher.
And how many classes or teachers would there be in primary?
There's 3 per grade.
Wow.
So, yeah, I'm the only one there other than the sports teacher until you get to grade 6. So I think encouraging males to be teachers beyond just teaching sport is such a challenge, especially when I was at university. There wasn't a lot of males studying primary. I did start out studying secondary, but I did have a swap after I did a bit of teacher aid work and realised that working with younger kids is very, very rewarding. I think most assume that it's a profession that doesn't really reward the male influence on the lives of students, but I think that's anything from the truth. I can remember during a prac once, it was at a very low socioeconomic school, and a male student had a big meltdown in the hallway, and he sat down. He was in my class, and it was one of those scenarios where the teacher's away, so he just sort of stuck following a relief teacher all day. And I sat with him after morning tea, and he turned to me and he said, "Oh, Mr. Peace, I wish you were my dad," which I think was the most heartbreaking and motivating thing you could hear all at once. Yeah. So I think, to go back to the root of your question, I think we can encourage more males to be teachers by emphasising how important it is for kids to have role models that are female and male, especially in those formative years, because they don't always get it at home and they don't always get it in their extended family. I think there's a lot of stigma and assumptions that parents have about teachers based not only on their gender but their age and their temperament. I think it should be up to those in leadership and the institutions to sort of support those male teachers in feeling safe in their workplaces, because you're not the male who makes all the tricky behaviours settle and go away. You're a person with limits and you should be sort of treated the same as other teachers in some regards, because I think male teachers tend to fall into the trap of, oh, we'll give every hard student to you and you'll scare them straight. Whereas, you know, if you look at my temperament, I'm quite soft-spoken and, gentle. So,
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and those students are looking for that support and that connection. They spend 6 hours of their day at school, so having that male connection can be a big support to them in their life outside of school as well. So I actually know a young St. Augustine's student, a young boy, and I did mention your name to him, and given you are the only male teacher in the primary school, no wonder he knew you.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm the last one standing.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes, the boy one.
So, no, he did say, I do know him. And okay. now that makes sense. So.
Yeah.
No, very good. So you haven't been a teacher for too long, given, from the time you graduated, but it was fantastic to see you would won an award for Beginning Educators Award last year.
Yeah.
Given last year was a particular challenging year for everyone, can you tell us a little bit how that came about, how you received that award and how you was nominated and that sort of thing?
Oh, absolutely. So it was an award presented by the Independent Education Union, which is the union for BCE schools. And in my first year as a teacher, I worked in the state. So when I came into the first staff meeting in the state, there was this immediate sense of you as a member of staff being as important to the life of the school as a student. And there was this unspoken value and merit that I sort of sensed in the staff meeting. Mm-hmm. It was very snappy, very short. You were treated very much the same as everybody else. And you felt very valued immediately, especially as a new student, new teacher coming as a student from university. It was very, very different, very like, oh, wow. So every meeting would end right on time, and the Queensland Teachers Union rep would speak passionately about back pay, targets, goals, and whatever was going on at that particular time. And I was very transfixed, but I was never able to break into what was going on. And there's a clear hierarchy and base, and I was in a place there. I couldn't quite get involved with the union there. But when I moved to the private sector, there really wasn't that presence there. They definitely work on a very different system. They value the students very, very much. Mm-hmm. It's definitely, because it's not like the state, it's a bit more of a business model as well.
Yeah.
They have a couple elements that the state just doesn't have. Not to say that's a negative at all, but it's just very different.
Different, mm-hmm. Yeah.
I moved over there, and I think I saw an opportunity to take what I'd seen, that passion, that that drive, the values of teachers as employees as well as educators of children, and I got to try to pump it in as much of it as I could into the workplace. I joined the Independent Education Union. I sent a lot of emails around to staff and members of the union. I checked in on co-workers. I became a site advocate for the health fund.
Yeah, wow.
Which was exciting. I finally got to learn a little bit about healthcare beyond my mum's Medibank private account. I got to work with reps. I held a little Labor Party day in lockdown with a dog and took little photos, and they loved that.
Alice is an avid dog lover.
You had me a dog.
It was a Pomeranian. It wasn't my dog, unfortunately, yeah, right. But it was very keen to pose in a photo. I sent letters and I raised issues, and I worked quite hard to be an advocate for all those things I really cared about, particularly LGBTQ support and events that were being forgotten by, I think, the large community, because they really shine a light on World Teachers Day, but there's tons of other days, and teachers are so diverse, and I think they get lost in making sure that the kids are all right and all the marking's done, that you sort of forget to celebrate with each other those days and highlight how diverse it really is. And other events that I think were being quite forgotten by the community as a whole, like Anzac Day, really felt like it was fading away because there was no marches and no ceremony. And I'm very much an advocate of Anzac Day and Remembrance Day. I did a lot last year to try and promote it in the local community. So I did that at school as well and in the union. So I worked as hard as I could to be involved without being, in the way. Because as a beginning teacher, that's also a bit, you don't want to discourage employers and say, oh, he's really painful because he brings up everything all the time. He's generally that devoted. So I tried to have a bit of a mix of, working really hard as a teacher, but also working really hard as an employee.
Yeah, finding that balance.
Yeah, with co-workers. And finding the balance, I think, is really important. And it's not something that you really get prepared for at uni. It's not an element that's talked about. And it's something I think you've got to find for yourself, how you fit in that big jigsaw puzzle. I was pretty well known. I went out of my way to get quite well known on the school's social media. So I was always sending photos of what we were doing and how I was innovating lessons to the social media staff member that puts it up online. I was lucky enough to be a drama teacher while I was studying at uni. So I think a lot of my approaches are very active and kinesthetic. So even in stuff like CAS, I was very keen to innovate on the lessons that have probably been 2 or 3 years old since they were written. And change them up a bit. So I was sharing that, innovating it. And then I was lucky enough to have my amazing co-workers, Cara and Zach at the time, and others nominate me. And I was fortunate enough to find out I won about 2 or 3 months later.
Wow. Yeah, so did you know that they nominated you?
Yes. Yeah, there was a big discussion about it because it sort of was raised in the staff room, and I kept raising it up saying, hey, there's this Beginning Teachers Award, and I really don't think anyone's going to get nominated. And for all I know, no one was. But
there was thousands.
I was selected amongst thousands of employees.
That's very cool.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Are there many big awards like that to recognise teachers, or how does that whole system work?
I think in the state it was definitely something that I heard about a lot. In the private system, though, it's very different. So you have the QCT, the Queensland College of Teachers, does a TeachX Award every year, which is the big one. You have, I think it's River 949, Best Teacher Award. And
is that the Apple for a Teacher?
Apple for a Teacher.
Yeah,
so that's the
one. Yeah, on the radio.
Yeah, I think a couple of teachers won it last year from my school. But yeah, there's definitely a lot of opportunities to nominate a teacher and give them a shout out, whether it's in an official sort of way with the QCT in a more of a union light in my regard, or if it's, say, something on the radio, a bit more for fun.
So you released a book called Polka Dot Prince. First of all, Dave and I have read it. We thought it was awesome, very powerful. So can you sort of tell us how this came about, like the backstory to this? Have you always been into writing, or, just keen to hear?
Yeah. Well, I was always really keen on telling stories. Being the oldest in my family and having a lot of cousins on the holidays in particular, it was sort of left up to me to entertain. So I would tell a lot of stories through play and through whatever I had to do to entertain my 3-year-old cousin and my 5-year-old cousin while I was 6. So I had to do that pretty much every year. And I think from there, I had a big passion for telling stories. And a lot of my teachers, when we did narrative writing, that was absolutely my favorite subject. I still have a bound copy of a book I wrote when I was 6.
Oh, wow.
And illustrated. And the teacher, Rachel Twigg, now Rachel Bellaney, was amazing. Yeah, she had that bound and gave it to me. And I've sort of cherished that ever since. And as I got older, it might not hold up, but the idea was pretty good. In my first year at USQ, I spent a lot of time catching the bus to and from uni. And I had this polka dot button-up shirt that I recently bought, and I wanted to wear it out that particular day. But I hesitated in the moment and thought that I didn't really want to wear it out because I'd probably get some snide comments and snickers on the bus and on the long walk from Orion to USQ. Because it's a particularly striking look. It's got polka dots everywhere. It's black and white. It's a bit of an unusual shirt. But then I stopped again and I backtracked thinking, why on earth would I care about what someone thinks about a shirt? And then I had, I guess, what you'd call a eureka moment where, you know, I was studying education. So educating was on my mind. I had this particular scenario and I thought, well, I've taught myself a lesson there. And then I wondered how I would teach that particular lesson to somebody. And within about 2 minutes, I sort of started to get an idea of a story. Yeah, it was a bit like what J.K. Rowling talks about, getting Harry Potter on a train. I suppose, sitting at a table waiting till the particular time the bus comes past was my moment there. And I got the skeletons there. And as I went to uni, I started to get the meat of the story and the liver and the spleen. And, yeah, eventually, I think that night, I started to write it down. And, yeah, I had it in about 2015, yeah.
Well, okay, I didn't realise how old the book was.
So no, me too, yeah.
You obviously came up with the sort of the concept with the shirt that you're wearing, but is there any connotations of the book that you sort of felt throughout your life, or is it just the things you've experienced with some friends and family?
Absolutely. I think I wanted it to be about anything, so I have been able to read it at libraries, and I've talked about, because the kids are obviously very keen to know more about it. So, you know, being a polka dot, it could be anything. Could be that you're of a different race or a different gender. Could be of your different sexuality. So it could be anything there. And I think going through my youth in particular and realising that I was a bit different and, again, gay, was quite difficult, because you get those comments throughout school, and once you finish school, they stop, but they definitely linger with you. So my sense of dress, I think, was something that I was keen to express a bit more, because 2015 was my first year out of grade 12 and first year into uni. I think I was very keen to try new things and express myself a bit more, but I was also a bit hesitant because, you know, love the public transport system, but you do get some interesting characters on
you
there.
You certainly do, yeah. Especially around this area.
Yeah, and I think society needs to be opened up that we can be individuals.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, reading the book, I did sense that it was all about trying to support those individual characters, and just happened to be the polka dot prince, of course, but from my perspective as a father, and your children are different, and everybody has a different idea on life. It certainly came across that you was trying to support that it's okay to be different.
Yeah, absolutely.
And to read a small children's book in that way, and actually be able to connect with it as an adult was quite inspiring. And you know, Alice had read it first. And then I read it the day after, and I think for us as adults reading a children's story, she went, "That was really good."
she
didn't say why to me. So, you know, for me to read it the next day, and I took it home and read it, and for me to read it the next day, I was same again. It was that surprise on when you think of a children's story, it had quite some striking messages in there. So,
yeah. I think the thing I love most about it is anyone can relate to it, because it's a polka dot prince. No one actually has polka dots on them. So it's not like there's a picture of someone who's from a certain color, or it's not a certain gender. Like, it's just taken away all sort of identity of this character. So anyone can relate to it. I thought that was what was beautiful about it.
Yeah. And I got my wife to read it, because I said, this book is really, you know, amazing. And the story behind it is very powerful. So, and she read it and she went, yeah, exactly the same feeling as what Alice and I had connected with the book. So yeah. I can imagine, you know, and you can tell us a little bit about that. What's there been the reaction from the students when you've read it to them?
A lot of them, it depends on the age. So for book week, I went around and I read the book to a couple different grades. I started with prep, and they were really interested in the colours of all things. And
yeah, wow.
It was something I actually forgot I did when I designed the book I had made.
I did notice that when the child got all gloomy as well, everything went black and then grey, and as he came back to life to be more of himself, the colour came back in. And
yeah, I had gone out of my way to make the text pages darker as well as the polka dot prince's character sort of has to hide his polka dots and then loses his identity. I made the pages very dark, and then when he's able to realize, spoiler alert for those who didn't read the book, when he realizes who he is, the pages get very bright.
I love
and
that.
There's a bright red page and a bright green page. And in the moment when I was designing the book, waiting for the illustrations to finish up, I thought, oh, this will be excellent because it matches what I've asked for and that'll work. And then Larissa Ivankovic's illustrations came through and they matched perfectly. And I was like, oh, that's fantastic. And then I completely forgot about it and was more wrapped up in the message of the story, which I think the older students pick up on a bit more.
Okay. Yeah.
Five-year-olds took it at face value, whereas the older students definitely get the deeper meaning of the story. But they understood what it was about even at 5 years old, and they picked up that, oh, the colours of the pages changed. So when you finish and you ask, what do you think, guys? That was one of the first things they pointed out, that, oh, I liked how it got really bright at the end when it was happy. And I had forgotten I did that. I was like, oh, yeah, that's right, it does. Yes.
Yeah, and when you're reading a story to young children, you're usually showing them the picture book as you're reading along. So that really, that illustration, and same again, very impressed with the artwork. And I think it really reflected as as an adult or as a as an older child, that they can really reflect on that, the colours and the artwork as well. So it was fantastic.
So I did notice in your book it was dedicated to your grandmother. So does this have special meaning?
It absolutely does, So my paternal grandmother, Desley Pryor Peace, who the book is dedicated to, she passed away last year in April. I suppose the special meaning here is really what was behind a lot of my drive in the latter half of 2020, when I went to try and publish the book as hard as I could and try to achieve all these things that I could. Because when I would see my grandmother in hospital, and in the times before, she always had this view of me that was so much bigger than what I actually was. She would hear things on Facebook or what my dad would say, and I think she was talked up a lot about how I actually was. So I remember it so clearly. This moment last year when I was by her bedside and I got a text asking if I would do some phone calls and help out in a by-election that was happening in the local area. And she didn't quite understand it. She looked at me and asked her, oh, you're running, which I did chuckle at. Yeah, but then I think at that moment there shone a light that that had been there for a while. And I wasn't quite sure what she thought of me when I said no, because she looked so disappointed. Like she genuinely thought I was running for office. So I had a bit of a realization that I had it within myself to sort of be that big figure that she thought I was, and to try really hard and achieve all these things, because I got a bit too comfortable, I think, as I finished uni and went to teaching. Every day was sort of the same.
Ticking over,
Ticking over. And there was all these things I wanted to do, and I would start them, but I would never finish them. So I had the polka dot prints there. I had an illustrator. I hadn't really heard back from her at the time, but I knew she was working on it, but I didn't really have any plans towards putting it together. And I had all these things I wanted to do. I wanted to be more involved in the school and more involved in the union and more involved in the area. So I think, that really was a drive to me, especially after she passed away, that I wanted to be what my grandma thought I was. So once I had finished the book, I decided, it was definitely absolutely dedicated to her, because I wouldn't have been able to go through with putting it together and publishing it and doing everything I could at that time if it wasn't for her. And having that time and looking back, I wouldn't swap it for anything else in the world. I think one of my last moments with her was the only time I was ever with just her, and we're watching the chase in the hospital, and it was just great. We just had a conversation about what I was doing and, how I was going to drive her car back to back to our house, because we had to move it from her apartment.
Yeah.
It was just a very simple conversation, but I think she sort of got a better sense of me and I got a better sense of her, but I absolutely wanted to be the person that she thought I was. So, that drove me a lot in the second half of 2020.
I'm sure she's very proud of you. I mean,
absolutely.
You have achieved lots of things. So do you have any more plans to write other books? Because I did notice that you wrote this in 2015, like you just said earlier, but you didn't publish it until last year. So are there any other books in the making?
Absolutely. I actually wrote a chapter book for kids at uni. I wrote it before the polka dot prints. It was just a hobby I got started on, because you do these subjects sometimes and you just need something else to do, because you do so much academic writing and you just feel like you've lost a bit of your passion. And when you like writing like I do, you just don't really want to fall into that humdrum. Mm. So I worked on a chapter book and I actually finished it as a procrastination tactic to avoid doing assessments. But I do work at my very best at the last minute, I think.
Yeah.
So I liked working that way. So that has been finished probably before the polka dot prints was finished, but it's just editing it has been an absolute killer and a bigger task than I ever thought it would be. So I've probably edited about half of the book, but it still has a long way to go. But it's not a bad idea, and I have tested it out on some students that are eager chapter book writers, and they've quite liked it, but they have pointed out, like, you use "and" instead of "are" like 20 times, and there's 8 spelling mistakes on this page.
Oh, no.
Hang on, guys, hang on.
Then you're not having to pay for a proofreader then. You've got your own proofreader.
No, yeah. Oh, no, I would never pay for a proofreader because I think they would go through and just point out all these things that would derail me. I'd rather find it myself, or get students to find it for me. But I've actually just started working on one that's a bit of a humorous guidebook for beginning educators, full of tips, tricks, and a few other goodies.
Oh, you'll have to send it my way.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah,
try it out on Alice.
Yeah, get the freebie, the demo copy.
I'll give you feedback and tell you where your spelling mistakes are.
There'll be tons.
So you told us about your award as a beginning educator, and also last year you also received a nomination for another award, which is quite a prestigious award in the community of Ipswich. So can you tell us about how you've been nominated for the Ipswich Young Citizen of the Year came about, which is quite an accolade for the size of Ipswich and, Springfield and the surrounding areas?
Well, yeah, you drive out sometimes and Ipswich is quite a big area. I was in Marburg last week visiting their, they have a Dunny that's also a library.
Yep.
And I donated a book
there. A toilet?
Yes, a toilet in Marburg. I highly recommend it. Highly recommend it.
Right.
Polka dot prints is there somewhere. Hopefully not being used as paper. But I went out there and that's the boundary of, or towards the boundary of Ipswich, and it's a good 25-minute drive from here. And you feel like, such a massive city. And it's on a motorway as well, so it's not like a 25-minute drive into the city. Yeah, when the pandemic first hit, I was pretty keen to help out in what ways I could. I felt very motivated by my grandmother, same with the book, to be a bit more like what she thought I was. And I started off by dropping a few of those Care Army slips into the letterboxes. You may have seen them on Facebook. It was just a slip saying, my name's Keegan, I can help you out with, and you could circle the groceries or getting something for you. And I just slipped those into letterboxes. Didn't have any takers. Oh. But from there, it kind of evolved because I did that and I went home and I felt pretty good. And I'm like, yeah, I'm working towards that goal I made for myself. And because there was no takers, you sort of feel a little bit better in a way. It's like, oh, I don't really have to do anything, but I've done something. Yeah. But then it did evolve.
Do you want me to keep this in the podcast or delete it?
No, definitely put your hand up, even if no one says yes. It's great if no one says yes as well, because then you get to sort of relax. But if someone says yes, it's even better.
Yeah.
In that instance, no one said yes, but it did feel pretty good to drop them off into some letterboxes and staying pretty COVID safe and socially distant in that really
because it was a difficult time for some people being locked. We're coming up to the year anniversary of the first lockdown and we do know that people were suffering, so offering that service, that help, even though it didn't get taken up, I suppose people don't always like to accept that kind of help, but it's really good to offer that. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think having my Nan and my Auntie Shell, who are really struggling because Auntie Shell relies a lot on the NDIS.
Yeah.
And, my Nan is, of course, a bit elderly, so she was not very keen to go out and get groceries at the time. And IGA is the closest one to her, and it's not exactly as spaced out as Costco, where she likes to go. So I think, she was definitely very hesitant to, and I got that sense from her that, a lot of people might feel this way. So I thought I'd offer to help there. And I helped her get Woolworths home delivery, which she qualified for. But she was very keen on going out and getting it herself. So I was glad that I could offer that and then offer it to other people, even if there was no takers. But later on, the Ipswich show was called off.
Yeah.
But the council was encouraging an event called Front Yard Friday, but I really don't think anybody knew about it. Did you guys know about Front Yard Friday?
No.
Yeah, I saw it and I thought, this is a great idea. It's a good way to get that spirit up, because I think I noticed at school with the kids and communicating with parents and communicating with my friend circle that a lot of morale and spirit was quite low at that time. In particular, the Ipswich show, I think, is around June. I think it's around the June period. I can't quite remember off the top of my head when it was. But the council was encouraging that event, and they had all these resources online, like bunting and cards and flyers and a couple of other goodies. I think there was a colouring in kit for kids. So I decided to get together all my spare paper and printers, and I made about 20 or 30 packs in envelopes, and I dropped them off into letterboxes, same as with the Care Army situation. I just encouraged the at-home festivities, and then I did a little setup at my front yard and took a photo and put it up online, and yeah, it was quite a good time. And later on in the year, I advocated Ida Hobbit Day, which is a day against discrimination for people in the LGBTQ community.
I've never heard of that day.
Yeah, yeah. It's one of those days that I really
What's it called? Sorry,
Ida Hobbit Day is the shortened version. I will not attempt to break it down because I will get it wrong.
Okay.
But it's essentially a day against the discrimination of the community there. There's a organization called Minus 18. Which does a lot of workplace PD, but they also have a lot of workplace resources. So I went on there and I forked out a little bit and got a big set of, I think it was 50 pins. I've still got tons left, actually. I just sort of made some packs around the community for that. And then I also distributed it around the workplace to other teachers and gave them some extra ones if they wanted to give it out, because I think that's something I'm a bit passionate about. It's another thing that got quite overlooked. And then for Anzac Day and Remembrance Day, I really got into the spirit. I did a big letter sort of breaking down my great-grandfather's story, because he was a veteran of the Second World War. And I got a big thing of poppies and I handed those out, and I repeated that for Remembrance Day later in the year. And I got really involved there, and I also did as much as I could, writing letters to as many strangers as I could and popping them in the letterboxes. So I had a very COVID-safe sort of operation there, but I started to hear in different avenues that people had got them and they appreciated them. I think one time when I got quite startled, because I always fear that my mum thinks I'm doing it for the wrong reasons, so I didn't tell her about that, but I had come back one day and she saw me and she said, what were you doing handing out poppies the other night at Augustine Heights? And I paused and I went, how did you know that? She goes, well, it's on the Facebook, on the Augustine Heights community group. They've shown all these pictures and everyone's saying thank you, and I wasn't in that community group, so I went, better try for that and see what people are saying. But yeah, there was thanks up there on there. Yeah. And I also got involved with the Ipswich Film Festival, which I try to enter every year. And I encourage anybody to. It's a great festival. And that was all online last year, and the Ipswich Poetry Festival as well. So I was trying to be as involved as I could in the Ipswich community, but also in my local community helping out. And I think, they got a bit of traction and notice for the Young Citizens
and got nominated for the award.
Yeah.
I have to say, I am very impressed. I'm starting to wonder what I do with my life outside of work. Seriously, do you see yourself as remarkable now like your grandmother did?
Oh, I think I'm getting there. She definitely held me very, very high. And I think I'm starting to fill those big shoes she had made for me.
I think you need to go back and listen to this podcast and go, oh, that was me. Wow.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'll cry for sure when I listen to the grandma part, and I'm sure my dad will.
You know, from everything that you've done there and everything you spoke about today, Keegan, you know, two awards, very active in the community to support wherever you can. You wrote a book, published a book.
Writing more books
books in the pipeline, which Alice is going to tap into because she's going to become a future teacher as well, hopefully. It's just amazing and you're only young yourself, so it's very, very inspiring that not only are you trying to bring the next generation, educate the next generation, you're still, as we all are, still educating ourselves, but also finding the time to put that much energy into supporting the local community, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
Now, you grew up as in the community as well, going to the school, and you're still giving back to the community. So that's fantastic for you. And
Thank you,
especially the people of Ipswich and Springfield.
Yeah.
Yeah. So to wrap things up, we like to ask some sort of fun and random questions. So who are you following on social channels at the moment? So is it someone funny, inspiration? It could be anyone, really.
Yeah, there's a good 100 or so people. I usually follow anyone that pops up into the recommended box. But I think I would always encourage people to actually follow their local MPs to get an idea of what's going on, because there's so many cool things happening all the time. So here it's Cherise Mullen and Milton Dick. So I would encourage anybody to follow just whoever their local MP is, just to find out what's happening and that, so they can get involved in the community, but also find out what wacky things are going on around in Springfield and the greater area. But I think in terms of humour, I really like what journalist Benjamin Law gets up to. If you know Benjamin Law, he points out a lot of interesting things that are happening in the world that I don't quite pick up on, and he usually finds something humorous about it. And you can never go wrong with them, the Batuta Advocate.
Yes, they're so funny. Have you seen them, Dave?
I've seen those,
yeah. Yeah, every day. I think I share about 8 or 9 to my mum, and then I'll share some to my brother, and then, I'll post some. And, it just never gets old. They always have a, something up their sleeve every day.
There's never enough never enough humor in the world.
Oh, never, no. So.
And they're really original. They're things that you've thought about, but you've never really heard anyone else joke about, and you're like, ah.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's unspoken things. Like, I think they had one about the centre of Brisbane should be the Hungry Jack's at Queen Street Mall. Like, yes, it should be. Yeah, it's something I've never sort of said out loud, but you think it because everyone meets
Everybody knows where it is.
Yeah, it's the centre.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
So Dave and I both think change can be led through conversation, which is sort of why we started this podcast. So what is a conversation you'd like our listeners to have at the dinner table tonight?
I think if you're with your extended family, you should go right for the jugular and ask about the will. I think it's really important to ask a parent or someone older about one thing that they think's changed for the better and one thing that's changed for the worst. You might be opening up Pandora's box there with grandparents, for example.
When they tell you you're not in the will.
Yeah, stuff like that. Yeah, but they might come out with something a bit like, ooh. But you find out things that have changed for the better and you're like, oh, that's good. And it's good to learn a bit more about people's personal history. I think everyone's got a really fascinating sort of origin story, especially those older citizens. Like my nan always comes out with something fascinating about 50 years ago or her childhood, and they go, oh, I remember for a history assignment once we had to do a family tree, and I called her up and I found out she was adopted, and I had never known that, and I was grade 10 at that point.
Yeah.
And then I asked mum, she's like, yeah, she's adopted, and it's just
never come up.
Something you never really
It was never get. Spoken about, no. was it? No.
I really like that. Talking about things that have changed for the better, because quite often conversation can very much be around what still needs to change, and it can be quite negative. But reflecting on, you know, the progress that we're making as a country or, you know, a globe,
society
in general. I like that positive spin.
Absolutely. I think with my nan and my aunt, who I brought up earlier as well, who has Down syndrome, one thing that's changed so significantly is the support she gets. She gets to go out like twice a week now, and she gets to meet other people thanks to the NDIS.
Yeah.
So I think that's one thing. Yeah, it's fresh on my mind because I had a conversation with Julia Gillard of all people on Monday at an event, and I was talking to her about that and just how I can remember being young and Anisha would just be home all day, just watching TV all day. Yeah. And that's all she would really do. And she was quite happy from what I could tell, and she'd do her puzzles. But now she gets to go out, she gets to go bowling, and she gets to converse with people, and she's going out and she's shopping and she's doing all these activities that she never did before. So that's absolutely one thing that's changed for the better. And I think conversations like that are really good to bring up.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's all from the support of the NDIS.
Yeah. She has a support officer that comes over and sort of takes her out with a group of other people sometimes. Sometimes she's just there with her, helping her out at home, or they might go shopping and get something she needs. Usually it's a DVD, but you know, that's an essential item.
She doesn't have Netflix.
She does. She's recently been cut off from my Disney Plus account.
I've
had to cut corners in some areas.
I've been cut off by my friend's Stan account. I just suddenly thought, oh God, I'm going to start paying myself.
I know. I realized how many I had, and I might have to cull a couple of these to save a few dollars a month. And then the other day, I think it was about a week ago, she barges at me when I come to visit and go, what happened to my Disney Plus account?
So our last question is a bit of fun. And if you don't drink wine, that's okay. We'll forgive you. But do you have a wine recommendation?
I'm more of a beer and a mixer man.
Okay,
but,
well, we'll take a recommendation.
We'll take a recommendation.
Beer. Yeah. Oh, you can't go wrong with Guinness. Every pub I go to, I ask for a Guinness.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Oh, in a glass. You got to hold it under the tongue for
a little bit
as well.
Have you been to Dublin?
No, but my parents had, and they saw the factory and they gave me all the tips.
I went through the Guinness Beer Factory when I was in Dublin and I learned how to pour a perfect Guinness, and I have a certificate, and then they give it to you at the end and I couldn't drink it.
Me neither, Alice. Oh, you're not on your own.
It's just thick, like it's drinking a syrup.
Yeah. It's like a nice malt. Yeah, it's a bit of a mix of everything. Yeah. So yeah, that's
hardcore.
That's a specialist drink, the Guinness.
My name's Irish, so I suppose.
True.
Yes, it means little fiery one. I'm named after a soccer player, but I'm no fan of soccer. But yeah, if I had to pick a wine, I think Jacob's Creek Moscato, any of those would be my pick. I'm more of a white person than a red person, but wine's not really my forte. So unfortunately, I have to disappoint in that area.
Up next, we will be interviewing Dr. Xanthi Galenko and speaking about how she went from being a dancer to a doctor.
Dancer to doctor, it's got a nice ring to it.
Thank you so much for listening to Up Next and this episode with Keegan Peace. You can hear more from Keegan on Instagram at Keegan Peace. Go to his website on keeganpeace.com.
If you want to support Up Next, you can find us on socials at upnext.podcast on Instagram and upnextpodcast1 on Twitter. We'd love for you to give us a follow on Spotify or subscribe on iTunes and leave us a 5-star review. We will be back in no time with a very special guest who we mentioned earlier, so stay tuned for more information.